Oh, say can we see by the one light in all our earth to embrace at the call of all nations where our children can play in a world without war, where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation, where the rivers run clean through the forests of green, where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom. Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with on Earth.
Welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can hear us live at accesssacramento.org, or you can hear this program and past programs at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. Today's program is The Fog of War, from the audio section of the movie Fog of War, which features the life of former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. He served under President Kennedy and Johnson. He reflects on his part in the bombing of Tokyo, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the Vietnam War. This film could have been titled The Evil That Men Do, but that's already taken. He talks about war crimes he and others committed. He observes the failures of government officials at the highest level to understand the basis of wars they direct.
Norman Morrison was a Quaker. He was opposed to war, the violence of war, the killing. He came to the Pentagon, doused himself with gasoline, burned himself to death below my office. He held a child in his arms, his daughter. Passersby shouted, "Save the child." He threw the child out of his arms, and the child lived and is alive today. His wife issued a very moving statement: human beings must stop killing other human beings. And that's a belief that that I shared. I shared it then, and I believe it even more strongly today. How much evil must we do in order to do good? We have certain ideals, certain responsibilities. Recognize that at times you will have to engage in evil, but minimize it. I remember reading that General Sherman, in the Civil War, the mayor of Atlanta pleaded with him to save the city. And Sherman essentially said to the mayor, just before he torched it and burned it down, "War is cruel. War is cruelty." That was the way LeMay felt. He was trying to save the country. He was trying to save our nation. And in the process, he was prepared to do whatever killing was necessary. It's a very, very difficult position for sensitive human beings to be in. Morrison was one of those. I think I was. 50,000 people came to Washington to demonstrate against the war. About 20,000 of them marched on the Pentagon. The Pentagon is a very, very difficult building to defend. We placed troops carrying rifles around it. U.S. Marshals in front of the soldiers. But I told the president not a rifle would be loaded without my personal permission, and I wasn't going to grant it.
Did all of this dissent have on your thinking? I mean, Norman Morrison is 65, this is 67.
Well, it was a very tense period. Very tense period for my family, which I don't want to discuss.
How is your thinking changing during this period?
I don't think my thinking was changing. We were in the Cold War, and this was a Cold War activity.
I think on the contrary, as General Westmoreland has pointed out in recent weeks in Saigon, the military operations, the large unit military operations, continue to show very substantial progress.
One of the lessons I learned early on, never say never. Never, never, never. Never say never. And secondly, never answer the question that is asked of you. Answer the question that you wish had been asked of you. And quite frankly, I follow that rule. It's a very good rule.
When you talk about the responsibility for something like the Vietnam War, whose responsibility is it?
It's the president's responsibility. I don't want to fail to recognize the tremendous contribution that I think Johnson made to the country. I don't want to put the responsibility for Vietnam on his shoulders alone. But I am inclined to believe that Kennedy had lived, he would have made a difference. I don't think we would have had 500,000 men there. 2 very telling photographs. One of them has Johnson like this. You can just see him thinking, my God, I'm in a hell of a mess. And this guy is trying to tell me to do something that I know is wrong and I'm not going to do. But how the hell am I going to get out of this? The other photograph, you can just see me saying, Jesus Christ, I love this man, I respect him, but he's totally wrong. What am I going to do? Johnson couldn't persuade me, and I couldn't persuade him. I had this enormous respect and affection, loyalty to both Kennedy and Johnson. But at the end, Johnson and I found ourselves poles apart. And I said to a very close and dear friend of mine, Kay Graham, the former publisher of the Washington Post, even to this day, Kay, I don't know whether I quit or was fired. She said, "You're out of your mind. Of course you were fired." November 1, 1967, I presented a memo to Johnson that said, "The course we're on is totally wrong. We've got to change it. Cut back at what we're doing in Vietnam. We got to reduce the casualties," and so on. It was an extraordinarily controversial memo, and I took it to him. I delivered it myself. "Mr. President, nobody has seen this. Not Dean Rusk, not the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, nobody. I know that it may contain recommendations and statements that you do not agree with and do not support. I've never heard from him." Something had to give. There was a rumor that I was facing a mental breakdown. I was under such pressure and stress. I don't think that was the case at all. But it was a really traumatic departure. That's the way it ended. Except for one thing. He awarded me the Medal of Freedom in a very beautiful ceremony at the White House. And he was very, very warm in his comments. And I became so emotional, I could not respond.
"Mr. President, I cannot find words to express what lies in my heart today. And I think I'd better respond on another occasion."
And had I responded, I would have said, "I know what many of you are thinking. You're thinking this man is duplicitous. You're thinking that he has held things close to his chest. You're thinking that he did not respond fully to the desires and wishes of the American people. And I want to tell you, you're wrong. Of course he had personal idiosyncrasies. No question about that. He didn't accept all the advice he was given. On several occasions, his associates advised him to be more forthcoming. He wasn't. People did not understand at that time. There were recommendations and pressures that would carry the risk of war with China and carry the risk of nuclear war, and he was determined to prevent it. I'm arguing that he had a reason in his mind for doing what he did. And of course, shortly after I left, Johnson concluded that he couldn't continue.
And at this point, how many Americans had been killed in Vietnam?
About 25,000, less than half of the number ultimately killed, 58,000. Historians don't really like to deal with counterfactuals, with what might have been. They want to talk about history. How the hell do you know, McNamara, what might have been? Who knows? Well, I know certain things. What I'm doing is thinking it through with hindsight. But you don't have hindsight available at the time. I'm very proud of my accomplishments. And I'm very sorry that in the process of accomplishing things, I've made errors. We all make mistakes. We know we make mistakes. I don't know any military commander who is honest who would say he has not made a mistake. There's a wonderful phrase, the fog of war. What the fog of war means is war is so complex, it's beyond the ability of the human mind to comprehend all the variables. Our judgment, our understanding, are not adequate. And we kill people unnecessarily. Wilson said, we won the war to end all wars. I'm not so naive or simplistic to believe we can eliminate war. We're not going to change human nature anytime soon. It isn't that we aren't rational. We are rational. But reason has limits. There's a quote from T.S. Eliot that I just love. We shall not cease from exploring, and at the end of our exploration, we will return to where we started and know the place for the first time. Now that's, in a sense, where I'm beginning to be.
Left the Johnson administration, why didn't you speak out against the Vietnam War?
I'm not going to say any more than I have. These are the kinds of questions that get me in trouble. You don't know what I know about how inflammatory my words can appear. A lot of people misunderstand the war, misunderstand me. A lot of people think I'm a son of a bitch.
Do you feel in any way responsible for the war? Do you feel guilty?
I don't want to go into further discussion. It just opens up more controversy. I don't want to add anything to Vietnam. It is so complex that anything I say will require additions and qualifications.
Isn't this feeling that you're damned if you do and if you don't, no matter what you
yeah,
say?
Yeah, that's right. And I'd rather be damned if I don't.
king of beasts with quite so little hair.
I'm gonna be the main event like no king was before. I'm brushing up on looking down. I'm working on my board.
Ah, thus far a rather an inspiring theme.
Oh, I just can't wait to be king.
You have a long way to go, young master, if you think.
No one's saying do this.
Now, when I said that,
no one's saying be there.
What?
No one's saying stop that.
What you doing?
No one's saying be here.
Now, see here.
We don't run around all day.
Well, that's definitely out. You and I arranged a heart-to-heart.
Kings don't need advice from little orphans for a start.
If this is where the monarchy is headed, count me out. Out of service, out of Africa, I wouldn't hang about. This child is getting wildly out of wing.
Oh, I just can't wait to be king.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
Some sunny day.